to advertise, email podcast@thisisvechi.com.
Release yourself from order and logic and enter a new place. It's not work. It's not home. Here, no maps have been drawn. No books have been written. Nothing is certain. Everything is possible. Welcome to podcast and chill with Matt G.
I'm assuming this doesn't end well.
So some people listen to radio, some people work in radio, and then there are people who quietly shape what the rest of us think radio even is. Greg Maloka is one of those people. Before podcasts were cool, before Afropolitan was a hashtag, before brands were talking about cultural positioning, Greg was already building platforms that made South Africans feel seen and even heard. From helping launch YFM, where youth culture found its volume button, to steering Kai FM into becoming the soundtrack of grown-up African ambition, this man didn't just spin records, he shifted identity. And the funny thing is, it all apparently started with him recording pretend radio shows in his bedroom. So today, we're going to be talking about culture, we're going to be speaking about influence, mentorship, and how you build something that shapes a nation without even shouting about it. Greg Maloka, Griza, welcome to Be Frank with Mac. I just want to start here quickly because I know you will forever be a radio head. When did you realize that radio wasn't just about the sound, but it was power?
It was at YFM. By the way, thank you for having me. Hello. It was at Y. And we had these youngsters that were that used to come hang out. You know, dodge school and come
loitering.
Okay. they'd come and you know, hope to catch a glimpse of you know, any of the DJs. And I got a team together to say, listen, we need to go to these kids' schools in the area. This was in Bertram's, like in the late 90s, gosh. I remember took Root Boy, Fetcho, Pindi, Tebow's, I think. And we went to go, you know, kind of speak at these schools, right? To say to these kids, listen, you need to stay in school. You're more than welcome to come visit YFM after school. You know what I mean? But you can't, like, duck classes just to, you know, come and, you know,
hang out.
You bunk school just to come hang out, you know? But in that space, we also kind of told them stories about ourselves, how we came up. And I was in this one class and I was telling a bunch of kids about just my upbringing and, you know, just life, you know, growing up in TK and Zone 1. And a year later, I meet this youngster at Komaro Crossing. He's working at a CNA, I think. It was, that's how long it was.
CNA.
How long ago it was, yeah. Oh. And I'm there buying a Christmas card, right? Or a birthday card, you know. And so he greets me by name. I said, ah, how are you? And back then, a lot of people didn't know what we looked like. Right. Yeah. Especially guys who were not on air, right? Because I was only on air, like, only a short time. And he retells me the story that, you know, the reason I'm standing here is you made me realize when you guys came to talk to us and when we listened to you guys over the radio, you kind of taught us to be responsible, play our part. He says, I'm raised by a single mother. And I've always been this, like, spoiled brat, never actually really internalized how hard my mother was working for me and my sister, you know, because the father had, I think, passed away. And And he says, I was a brat, man. Never helped around, never did anything. So I went and found the job just so I could say to my mom, I can also be functional and
I can contribute.
I can contribute.
Yeah. Yes.
And I said, all of that from just listening to us talking. And he says, yeah, because what you were saying in our classroom is actually reinforced in the radio. We just weren't, you know, but because we pay attention. That's how I realized how powerful this medium is. And I saw him over the weekend, over that particular weekend. On the Monday when I went back to work, I remember I called a presenter's meeting. And I said, guys, like, okay, I knew we had listeners. And we call them listeners, but we don't internalize the fact that they are actually listening.
Listening, yes.
You know, we need to be careful about the things we do and say. And I remember we went and reviewed everything, including promos. It was amazing the things we had to pull out. Because while certain things were fun things to say and they sounded really cool on radio, they weren't actually kosher. You know, you remember those lines.
Of course.
You know, and I thought, gosh. And that's when I realized just how powerful that medium was and how important it was for us to use it responsibly.
Let's go back to 14-year-old Greg in his bedroom on the tapes making his own radio, right?
Yeah.
Was it because you were lonely or was it because you already saw the power of radio or you're already a CEO at that time of your own little radio world?
A little bit of everything except lonely. I don't think I was lonely. I had... a brother who was 3 years older than I am, and my sister who's still around, who's 6 years older than I am. We listened to a lot of music together. I had friends, so I, you know, but there was a radio station called Radio Bob, which was broadcasting from Putatswana, which was another country back then. The young people may not know this, but Northwest was its own country
at some
point, you know. and Radio Bob was just liberating for me, right? Because two things were happening at around that time. One was that I had this uncle who was a very he was a nuisance. For security police in South Africa. He was a photojournalist. So, you know, he had I refer to it as an interesting relationship with the apartheid apparatus.
Yes.
So once in a while, he would have to skip. And at some point, he had to kind of leave the country. And he found himself in New York through Kenya. And when he got there, he discovers... WBLS in New York, which is a radio station in New York. And BLS was playing all the music we love to play back home. So he got so excited. And he used to record BLS tapes, right? And send tapes to us. He said, can you listen to this radio station, man? They're playing, you know, all the music that we love, all the things, right? And
wow.
So I'm listening to BLS. I'm listening to Radio Bob. And he used to send... magazines as well, you know. So it'd be like a little box, like, you know, media.
Yes, with everything. Yes, was like, yes,
you know,
yes.
Media stuff, you know. So there I was, like this, you know, 13-year-old in Deep Kloof, Zone 1, dusty streets, listening to BLS, Radio Bob, and reading GQ magazine. You know. And that's how my world opens up. And, you know, listening to music, I mean, that also just transports you to places. And then I started having this obsession of, you know, localizing all of that because all of it was from outside. But what was the thing that was a reflection of where I was and what my feelings were and what my reality was? So I started to create my own radio station, which, you know, kind of borrowed from, you know, all of these different sources. And I used to call it Radio MLK.
Radio Maloka. I know the MLK is for Maloka.
You know, but you know, you had WBLS in New York. You had the Radio MLK. It was lovely.
If we were to listen to those tapes now, Would we hear chaos or would we hear confidence in terms of what you were trying to achieve or communicate at that time?
Oh, man, I had great examples of people that I listened to. So, you know what they say about kids? Kids don't listen to what you say. They replicate what you do.
Yes.
Right? And so if you want to get people, you know, children, young people behaving in a particular way, best you be the example. So I had the best examples. I was listening to some of the best presenters, you know, when Apartheid South Africa at the time was giving us, you know, very limited, you know, sort of, you know, exposure to media and, you know, everything else being to a certain degree dammed down, mm-hmm. right? There was, you know, everything that was described as, you know, African was half the time, like, you know, a quarter of intelligence and some other thing called traditional or whatever. We had all these labels that, like, you know, positioned us as very primitive humans. But when you have the exposure, right, and you're able to draw from that, you start to realize that, you know, the same emotions are evoked in you that, you know, others around you and those that you regard as, you know, the greats in the game are going through the same kind of emotional journey. You are those people too, you know.
Who are your influences then at the time? If you speak about Radio Bob, who are the people that you were listening to that we would say shaped your radio mind over outside of WBLS?
There's quite a few, man. Lawrence Dube was one of those people.
Yes.
Bob Mabena was one of those people.
Grant Shakwana at that time, or he came later?
Yeah, Grant was Metro.
Yes.
That he got bigger at Metro.
Yes.
And I liked him. I liked his playful way. You know, but for me it was a Brenda Sisani. You know, it was a Thuli Moagi. It was, you know, kind of this quiet, curious intelligence about culture, you know. And those are the people that really, really got me, you know. And then there were others who were kind of, and I mean, a lot of it was also influenced by the Black American culture, you know, like we all, you know, picked up accents on TV and like it was, you know. So all of those energies found each other.
Yes. And then got translated into radio.
And it got translated, exactly. And then you had to kind of, you know, localize it to make it, you know, more relevant, you know.
Yeah. When you speak about radio, we know it's almost like it's an invisible power, you know, but everybody absorbs it. Nobody sees it.
Yeah.
But everybody absorbs it. Like you say that, you know that we've got listeners, but we don't think that they're actually listening.
Yeah. Challenge with a lot of radio stations is that they are bad listeners themselves. So to be a powerful radio station, you've got to be a great listener first. Yes. And what I mean by that is your job is to reflect society. Your job is not to tell society. You know, there are parts where people will depend on you for pointers, right? To say, hey, I've discovered this. Has anybody else discovered that? Don't say, I have discovered this. You don't know this. Now you go and do that type of thing. It's kind of like, no, I saw this. Because there's always somebody who's seen it.
Of course.
And they will say, hey, I didn't know you saw it. Connection.
Immediately.
Right? And then everybody else is like, well, I mean, how do you guys see that and don't? Growth,
yes.
Right? Momentum, energy, built. I mean, again, if you think back to YFM, YFM for me was, and dare I say this, but probably the most powerful youth revolution after June 76.
Yeah.
Because the level of confidence that that generation built amongst young people who were growing in a system that was hell-bent on breaking that very confidence.
Yes.
Right. We had laws and rules and systems that made sure that you are never confident, that you care, you just can't, right?
Yes.
You know, which is why today the buzzwords are things like imposter syndrome and all those things, because, you know, you always think you are inadequate, right? We had a system that created a thing where young black people were perpetually beginning, right? Because we became
the first of everything.
Obsessed with, oh, we were the first of, and it became a badge. And I was like, no, I was not the, you know, people say, oh, you guys are the pioneers of radio. No, I'm not the pioneer of radio. I've just told you about people that I've been listening to.
Yeah.
Right? They have people before them.
Yeah.
And so on and so on. Radio is a medium.
It's a storytelling medium.
Right? It's a storytelling medium. But the oldest thing here is the story, not the medium. Right? So you got to ask yourself, you know, before we had transmitters in Africa, are you wanting to tell me that we didn't have stories? No, we did. Right? What was the medium then? You know? Was it a, you know, was it a tree? What was it?
In a dipale. I get it, that's why we used to sit under a tree and be dipale. I don't know what to say about Zilani when I
could. Absolutely.
Yes.
Right.
And it's always been a part of our culture and our upbringing.
Absolutely. And so sometimes we get blindsided by, you know, people making you look at the technology as if the technology is what has unearthed your story. No, it's just the medium.
You know, there's something very powerful that you once said, and it stuck with me forever. And I remember it was probably in one of your sessions, but you said, imagine what South Africa would have been like if Jan van Riebeeck hadn't landed. What would have our architecture looked like? What would our buildings looked like? What would our country, what would have it looked like? Because that's the biggest disservice that was done to us as a people.
Yeah. I call it the great interruption. You know, how would you have turned out had you not been interrupted? You know, how would you... your own trajectory in life have been as a citizen of this continent, as a citizen of the world, you know, what would your contribution have been? How would you have developed by yourself? I mean, one of the things that really, really make me very sad half the time when I think about it is, you know, you can get back political power, you can get back wealth, you can get land, you can get. What you will never know is how you would have turned out had you been left alone. How would you have told your stories? How would you have evolved in terms of technology, in terms of architecture, in terms of community, you know, building? How? Right. And I hate this idea of, you know, people trying to say, oh, but we brought this in. No, I didn't want it. Just leave me alone. Let me just move the way I move, you know, so I can authentically be this person that has a history, this person that has, you know, a story that is, that goes further than friggin' 1652.
Do you think there are African countries that got it right? Right? Because our disturbance, our great interruption happened because of the landing of Jan van Riebeeck here and, you know, Dutch culture and, you know, Cape Dutch buildings and what have you, then the gold rush, et cetera, et cetera. Because I feel like you see it more in other African countries because their disturbance maybe either came much earlier or much later, whereas we weren't given a chance. I mean, I even go back to the thing of saying, like, South Africa King, it's not even a country, it's like a direction. You know what I mean? We're in the south of Africa, and now we're South Africa. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Yet when you speak to a Nigerian, you know that and feel, and it makes you feel that they're a Nigerian, a Zambian, all of the, a Kenyan, you know what I mean? They've got this strong sense of identity about who they are.
Yeah.
And our sort of fractures in our country.
Yeah.
You know, we are South African, Marikim Osoto, I'm a South African, Marikim Khosa, we can't come together and say we are South Africans.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was the genius of that system, right? The genius of that system was to, create separations within separations, right? And sort of try and bring it all together. It just, feels cumbersome, feels like a futile exercise. But, I don't want to sound pessimistic as well, and so the great thing is we know what our challenge is, right? So the first thing about having a challenge is, do you know what it is and are you working towards dealing with it, right? And have you got people around you, no matter who and what and how they identify, seeing the challenge exactly the same way? And are you all about, so I often say to people, when we were at Kai FM, we had this positioning of, the Afropolitan, right? And the Afropolitan was largely misunderstood, like, especially in the advertising industry and some of our clients, who aren't Black Africans, like, who are, white people. And they would say, why are we not Afropolitan? And I said, Afropolitan is not about a bunch of guys in afros. If that was the case, I wouldn't even qualify. I don't have an afro. You and I wouldn't be Afropolitan. I said to them, does your heart bleed Africa? Do you see a future here for your children and your grandchildren? Or have you got two passports waiting to see what the hell's going to happen? If you have one passport, and if you say, this is my home, I belong here, I may have visas and all kinds of things, but I live here, this is my land too, doesn't matter who you are. And you say, we're going to get it right, whichever way, because I have a vested interest. I have generations that are coming. You have a vested interest. You've got generations that are coming, right? And it's also that thinking about, as cliche as it sounds, it's so true. Be prepared to plant the seed of a tree whose fruit you're not going to eat, right? Don't rush the process.
Yeah.
Okay. Your fruit, if I put a seed down, right, when that bud pops up and there's like a flower, a semblance of something that's good, that's my fruit. That is what I need to aim for, right? And then just pass on to the next generation to say, here's how you water this thing for it to become a tree that won't give you fruit, but it will give you shade, right? And your next generation will have fruit, but they need to know how to put the seed back into the ground. And so the thing goes. That's being Afropolitan. If all of us are moving in that direction of saying, how do we make the country better? Right? But yeah, we're hedging bets. I mean, what are we doing?
At the time when you were building YFM, and I want to go back to that because it almost became a movement, right? It became, as you said, it was probably one of the biggest events after June 16, which is something I can agree to because that's the first time we had expression. That's the first time we could express ourselves. We could sing our music. We could wear our clothes. I mean, who knew at that time?
Yeah,
I experienced it, right from the beginning.
Yeah.
Do you think you were creating rebels or were you creating responsible citizens? When you look at the path that everyone has taken.
I'll give you two stories, two of my favorite stories. One of them is this youngster who at the time was, I think it was 14. Loved house music, loved house music, right? With all his heart. Loved YFM. He was like, this is it for me.
This is right? My life.
This describes my energy. It talks about like the things I want to do in life, right? It gives me courage second to none. Okay. His dad used to bring him to our parties, right? And leave him at the front of the stage with his snacks. He was underage, right? Leave him with his snacks.
Mazimba Lady Sweets.
Yeah. Lady Juliana.
Yeah.
And he says, I'll be right at the back or in the car. When you're done, take your time. And the boy would be there like this, right? When they're driving to school, he's controlling the dial. When he's at home on the weekend, that's he consumed it, right? When he met his wife later in life, his wife bought him, surprised him and bought him tickets to a Louis Vega gig we were doing at Baseline.
Whoa, I remember that gig.
Right? It was Louis and the Elements of Life, actually.
Yes.
Like, okay.
Oh.
Fast forward today, he's a CEO of a private bank, but like the best private bank in the country, according to Financial Times, right? That's who YFM produced. That's the story you want here, right? If you think about a young lady like Gugu Mfuphi, who also, kind of was nurtured by that culture, and, you know, found her way, you know, into media, into business. She's now probably one of the most powerful financial journalists in this country, right? She's from that culture, right? Think about hip-hop as an industry. There was no such thing as commercialized hip-hop. It was underground. Kids were listening to music at home, mm-hmm. Getting tapes from wherever. Very difficult to acquire. Similar story like house music,
yes,
as an example, right? Only DJs had house music, had access to house music and so forth. YFM took all those cultures, blended them together when they actually lived separately, right? And not only that, we then deliberately used that platform to grow Kwaito, right? And put everything on the same level. What you don't realize at the time is the level of confidence that you are building amongst creators. And that's what you've got to do. You've got to ignite the creative spirit amongst young people and just watch what they do, right? The most number of companies in the entertainment industry that opened in the YFM era. Well, that's a record label, an events company, PR agencies. You know, if you think about, you know, companies like Dreamcatcher.
Yes, Marang.
Yes, if you think about, how even labels that were big became bigger, right?
Yellow Records.
They became larger, whether it was 999 or Galawa Records. You know, look at what Ghetto Ruff did. Like that era of, YFM inspired Eizo, you know, and all these genres, Lakshin culture. So if you think about fashion, right, in its broad sense, and today, you know, you wear, Tsepo jeans, you know, and you're like,
yeah.
It ain't a thing. But when you understand where that came from,
get to appreciate it.
You get to appreciate it.
Do you then now sit and then when you listen to the broadcast as of now. Mm-hmm. You listen to radio now.
Yep.
Do you feel like we were sharper? We had a bigger drive? Because not remember the WhatsApp message. Anka buta WhatsApp message. Urinkaraya radio. Kay betsa iwele ka engine.
If I hear another person say, let's go to the WhatsApp calls. WhatsApp messages. No, man. No. Have a producer that scans the calls, that finds a caller, right, that you can talk to. Don't have to take 10 calls. Just take one great conversation. And again, some people will say, "I Luna, you're behaving like curmudgeons. In today's world, it's WhatsApp messages, it's this and that."
But no. Even those WhatsApp messages must at least have something.
That's why I say, have a producer. Cut the thing beautifully. Because what you want is the message that the person is conveying. You don't want the ooms, the ums, and the ams. If you can, get rid of all of that stuff, why aren't you?
And in this day and age, it's much quicker, much faster with the technology than what we have.
Why aren't you doing it?
It should be much better.
We did it back in the day. We used to cut the thing and make it sound good because you want the person, to make their point. You want the person to sound good. You want your listener to sound amazing. You don't want your listener sounding like... Anyway.
Would you say aging in media is brutal, right? Or is it freeing? We had a conversation just offline now where we spoke about being able to say no, being able to walk away from certain things, right? But I'll always say radio will always be my first love.
Mm.
If I get an opportunity again, I'll go straight back into it.
Yep.
Right? But it's also being able to know when to walk away when you no longer belong and when you're no longer relevant. And it's probably more brutal to women than it is to men.
Yeah. Again, we are victims of trends, and that's such a sad story. I remember flying Iberian Airlines many years ago. We were flying to Spain. Ibiza.
Ibiza.
Ibiza. So we're going to Ibiza. I remember it was the first time. Remember, these were young days, right? Yeah. All the airlines I had flown up until that point, right? Air hostesses were like models, mm-hmm. like proper good looking, yes. like, you know?
Tall.
There was a stand-up. Yeah. And I jump into this flight. Give my old lady. Found it at first weird. And then worse, never Chicano. Because I remember trying to say, excuse me, I can better meet or something. She was like, momento. So I'm like, never Chicano, And, it's a long flight to Spain. But you get there and you've gone through a few thoughts and thought processes. And you're like, it's actually really wonderful, right, to see very experienced older folk that are still able to work. It's a different experience. Larry King, no one said Larry King was too old to be on television. Mama Miriam Makeba sang her last note on stage. And she still did her thing.
Yeah.
So who decides on age? Have you got wisdom to share? Have you got stories to tell? Do people depend on you, for something? And are you able to still give all of that? And if you can, why not? I remember when we were bringing Bob Mabena on the breakfast show on Kaya. And everybody said, oh, Bob's great, but good luck. You're not going to have him 18 months, you know, because, you know, he moved around a bit at that time. He had been
everywhere. He'd been everywhere.
Yeah. Bob had been everywhere, right? So I said, okay. So I sat with Bob and I said, Bobinho, Aramid told me, right, here's the thing. We have this idea that we want to grow. It is going to take us 7 years to grow this idea. And we're going to write each other a long contract. Must remember on radio, people get 12 months.
12 months, that's it.
Right? 2 years. These days, at least, some longer contracts and stuff, which is great. Bob and I committed to each other 5 years at that time. And the whole idea was there was a very specific thing that we wanted to achieve with that audience, with the Afropolitan, with that mindset.
What was the thing you wanted to achieve? We need to know.
Just know that you've achieved it. Just know that you got it. Just know you have it. Right. As part of that movement and that generation, trust me, you have it. You know? And when, you know, we were bringing David O'Sullivan to join Kaya, again, it was a polarizing decision. And people were like, hey, my look, what's up? What's going on? You know? And I remember, you know, half the building saying, okay, good luck, this is the end. And another half saying, we'll be over here. We'll listen over the radio. And again, the response was to what was coming. And what was coming required deep understanding of the country and but different views in how we see the country. And people who have long-standing, who had been experienced journalists that covered various aspects of this country. So when David O'Sullivan was coming in, it wasn't to replace Bob. A lot of people don't know this, mm-hmm. right? We were moving Bob to the afternoon drive, and David O'Sullivan was going to be in the morning. And this was 2 years before the elective conference of the ANC and a year before the elections. It's 2 years before.
Yes. So you saw it.
Right. And this was the discourse that was required. And then we had built up, you know, other sort of content in between. We had repositioned Google's business show, which, I mean, is award-winning to this day, right? We had done all these things. And this was in our fifth year with Bob. Right. And unfortunately, in fact, a lie, David was going in the afternoon, Bob was staying in the morning. Unfortunately, Bob came to me and said, you know, my brothers across the highway, they need a little help. They want me to come over.
Power FM at that time.
That was Power. Yes. And I said, Bob, man. We have a mission, bro, you know? And there's 8 months left in this mission, you know? And I said to Bob, you know what? You have my blessing, you know? Go do your thing across. I'll figure out what we do here. Then I went to O'Sullivan and I said, yo, it's not afternoon anymore, check. It's now morning. And I mean, David, he was like, no. He initially said no, by the way.
Yeah.
He said, no, Greg. I can see what you guys are doing at Kaya. And like, I've watched, and you're like, this powerful Afropolitan positioning. I said, who says you're not? He says, oh, yeah, wait a minute. Yeah, you know, I'm like, Azish, you know? And I mean, had we achieved that, I mean, to this day, I think, wow, what would have happened, you know? But again, you know, things fall where they fall.
Was leaving Kaya painful for you?
How I left Kaya was painful. Leaving it, no, it wasn't. Because I resigned, you know?
Yes.
I said, thanks. A lot of people don't know that I actually resigned. I said, thank you. How was the problem for me, right? And, you know, in again, there were these five cats who came, who called me after the whole debacle and said to me, and one of them was the story I told you of a 14-year-old kid. These guys are now professionals, young families, right? Five of them, they call me. In the thick of that whole Kaya thing, you in media, you accused of this, you accused of, you know, harassment, like money and, you know, everything, which none of it was actually really proven. Yeah. By the way, it was just like all these...
Yeah, get about it. You're running Kai Fam like it's your own tuck shop. And now you've got a brothel.
No. And, you know, I'm very disappointed to find that there was no such thing.
Yeah. Right.
But these guys call me, okay? And they say, we have modeled our success around you. And we don't have the right, but we have the right. We have the right. You need to tell us what happened. You need to tell us what you did and what you didn't do.
And so,
they put me down. Yeah,
you didn't do it, some of them, too, because if you're saying he was 14.
All of them. But now they're professionals now, yes. Because that they didn't do it at Y. Now, one is running his own legal firm. Another one is running a bank. Another one is the CEO of a pharmaceutical company. Another one has his own business. Is one of the biggest electronic distributors. Young guys, right? YFM generation. And they're like, but here's where it just also like blew me away when they said, you also need to tell us what to do when this thing, because it is coming for us too. We've seen this pattern before. So first deal with the truth. You must tell us what you did.
Yes.
Like, you know.
Let's clear the air.
And I took them through it, you know. And they were like, oh, okay. So because they were like, listen, we have wives, you know. And our wives are like,
is this the kind of guy you're hanging out with?
Right?
Because everything falls apart.
And let me tell you something, Mac. That was the best form of love I had ever received in that period. Ever. Ever.
Because the world also turns its back on you, right?
It blew me away. I was like, you know, there's something worth fighting for here.
Yeah.
You know? And it's something different. You know? Anyways. And we went, you know, we went through all of that. The whole campaign really was, you know, to rubbish you and have you move because, you know, people had...
other agendas.
And none of it worked. In a few years, I was getting the phone call, right, to say, are you busy? Let me first say I'm glad man isn't ready. Because it'd be foolish, it'd be pompous, it'd be arrogant, it'd be a bad listener. That's what I think.
If you were to host a Kai FM dinner, who's sitting at the table?
Alive or dead?
Both. All of them. All of.
Okay. Bob Mabena, no doubt. I'll start with the other realm. Bob would be there. Kabzela would be at that table. Dirk Hartford would be at that table. Dirk Hartford was our CEO at YFM.
Yes.
Okay. And I know this is a Kaya table. How big is this table?
10.
It's a small table. Why don't you do those fancy winding tables like they do in the Winelands? It's like 6,000 people. Kim Tipe would be at that table.
Oh, yes.
There would probably... So I'm not going to give you names. All I'm going to say to you is 70% of the people at the Kaya table would be from YFM. And 30% would be from Kaya when I was there.
What kind of legacy do you think you're leaving behind, Greg?
I don't think deeply about legacy. I don't want to lie. I think legacy is what society decides when you die.
Yes. The lives that you've touched, the people that you have, you know, whose lives that you've changed, one being mine.
All your actions will determine your legacy. You know, I like to deal with challenges as they confront me at any given stage of my life. Yeah, and that's it.
What's next? What's next, Chris? You've done YFM. You've done Kaya, right? And I'll tell you why I'm asking that, because YFM is youth and it spoke to you as a young person, as a person that was changing this country. The country was changing. We were a young country, never mind that. The Afropolitan was... us coming of age, you know, knowing that we belonged in certain spaces, taking control of those spaces, owning those spaces, right? Mm-hmm. Now, what's next, Chris? You know, because you've been that true north for many of us. You've been the true north for the industry, so to speak.
Yeah.
So what is next? You know, where are we going? Because also at a time like this when... whether it be politically, whether it be, you know, this new generation, whether it be the woke generation or whatever, what's next? What comes after the Afropolitan? You've done the youth, you've done the Afropolitan. Now, reagai.
It's a very simple answer, Meg. Very simple, at least in my world.
Yes.
Back to the drawing board. And for me, the drawing board is back to young people. We've abandoned young people. We criticize them. We accuse them. We don't support them. We're scared of them. We impose our experience and how we were brought up on them. We just don't listen. Mac, if we did the things that we did with Y at the ages that we were, how dare we not trust young people today? Who are we? So, back to the drawing board, back to young people. We have to seek another revolution. And somebody's got to inspire that. And I want to play in that team that does that.
Chrisa, thank you so much.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you for...
I'll see you at Jill Scott. Are you coming?
Yes. I'll put a kid at Jill Scott to kill our child or Jill Scott.
Yeah, okay.
Hey, you know him like... man. Is she still married?
It's a kid.
Oh, Ash. Thank you so much.